Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture with my wonderful friend and co-host, Michael Rakia. Today, we're going to be talking about Many Voices, One Mission, which is his latest book, but he's got another book ready to go to the presses. So good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria. It's great to be with you again.
It's always good to be with you. It feels like it's been 100 years since we last talked.
Yes, it does, and it's only 2 months.
I know. It's a crazy world we're living in, for sure. Anyway, you just told me before the show that you just completed the writing of your latest book.
Well, we completed the bringing through of the latest book. We completed the 18th transession last Saturday. So that means that the whole book is with us and on many devices, so it can't get lost. And Jane is furiously transcribing as I speak. She has 12 of the 18 chapters already committed to paper, or the equivalent of the digital equivalent of paper. And our schedule is that we get it to the printers just before Christmas, and it is released just after Christmas in January.
That's great. What do you have a title?
The Spaces Between.
The Spaces Between.
Yes, very enigmatic. Very enigmatic title.
Yeah. Well, I really like it.
Actually looking in the new book at the areas of life that we think have nothing in them. The spaces between our lives, what we consider to be empty space in the universe, what we consider to be empty space on Earth, and what is actually in those spaces, spiritually speaking.
Right. You know, many.
Looking at aspects of ourselves. He furthers our knowledge of aspects of ourselves, but also looks at the other spiritual lives, aspects of spiritual life that coexist with us, some of them positive, some of them negative. So it's a fascinating subject, a fascinating read, and does actually fill in the gaps in our spiritual knowledge. I think if someone's reading this book, they will never look at the earth in the same way again, and that was Joseph's intention, again, to shake us out of our complacency and to say things are not as they seem.
Right.
It's a different world than you expect it to be. And here's what's happening around you and through you. And here's what you're contributing to that world. And by the end of the book, you should have a very different view of things here.
Well, that's great. I can't wait. You know, many years ago, there used to be a New Age magazine called Connecting Link. And I used to write for them. Excuse me. I used to write for them quite often. But one column I remember that they had in that, and it wasn't mine, was The Spaces Between Things. That was what
really?
The column was called. And they would talk about, you know, that there is no empty space here.
Yeah. You know?
And it was pretty fascinating. So it's interesting. The title of your book makes me want to read it even more.
Oh, that's great. As with all Joseph's titles, they're not repeats. We don't do sequels.
Right. Well,
we do something that furthers knowledge.
That's what it should do.
Certainly, again, furthers knowledge in a startling and also an educational way and a heartwarming way as well.
Right.
But there are some startling reveals in the chapters. And I can't wait for us to get it out there and to have reaction to it.
Well, I will tell you this. You know, as you know, I do private sessions with a lot of people.
Yes,
and the way that I talk to them, when I can see that they're just starting to come into their spirituality or spiritual curiosity, I tell them, don't bother reading. And then I tell them what books not to bother reading. And I say, if you want pure spiritual truth, instead of being strung around and never getting a straight answer, you need to go over to josephspeaks.com and buy all the books. And that's what I recommend for my students. That's what I recommend to anybody. because your books have more truth in them. Straight talk, not, you know, ring around the rosy and you never get an answer. And everybody that I've recommended to your work loves it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's, again, that the book is a call to action, as you've just said, that the books don't contain platitudes. Platitudes are useless. Or a book that, in my view, that at the end of the book you say, well, that was very nice, and then you move on and completely forget about what's been in the book, is useless to us at this point in our spiritual journey.
Right.
Each Joseph book is a call to action. It's a call to spiritual reality, but it says we need to do something, and we need to do something fast.
Right.
And it's down to each of us to do something.
Exactly. People think they're just going to sit home and chant the Om, saying there's no place like Om. Or put a, you know, or put a bubble of light around themselves. Yeah, that's not going to work. Or the, you know, this misconception of if you visualize it, it'll happen. You know, without any action behind it.
Yeah.
And what I have found through many years of, you know, being involved in, you know, spirituality and teachings, is a lot of times you can get one author who puts out a magnificent first book. It's loaded with great information. And then they realize there's money to be made. And the second, third, fourth book is a repeat of the same thing with no useful information.
Yes.
I cannot say that about your books.
Well, as you know, we don't take anything personally from sales of the book. Everything goes back into promoting the books and publishing the books. And it's always over to Joseph. You know, I sit there, we sit once every month, or have done until last Saturday, and I don't know what it's going to be about. Sometimes I get a theme from Joseph, and I say, look, not now.
Right.
Don't bring it through now. Bring it through when we're sat together and we've got the power to deal with it. But the books assemble themselves as if magically, because, of course, he has a mission. He knows what each book is going to be about. And at the beginning, you think, well, what's this about? How does this tie together? These chapters don't seem to run together, but by the end of the book, they do.
Right.
And he's made a very striking point in one area of spirituality.
Right.
But that's the other reason that we publish ourselves, that we publish the books ourselves, because Joseph said, don't change the words.
Exactly. Well, that's I was told when I wrote my spiritual book on the medicine wheel, not to put a barcode on it and to just sell it to myself, you know, just sell it by myself.
Yes.
Because they didn't want the system's 666 stamp on a pure book like that.
Yes.
Of course, it hurt me sales-wise, but I have integrity, so I listen. You know, and the way you get your messages, you know, I don't think I've ever shared this with you before. You know, and I think it was 2006 when I was asked to speak at a 9/11 conference in Chicago. And, you know, I had interviewed so many experts on it, I thought I knew everything I needed to know about it. But what was interesting is, Michael, for 2 months, every night at 2 o'clock in the morning, I would be awakened and I would get two lines, just two lines for that speech. And I was so exhausted. I was like, can't you just do this in the morning and let me sleep? But I knew at the end of that lecture that it would be the absolute best lecture anyone would ever hear, because I truthfully didn't write it.
So you were given two different lines each night?
At 2 in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
For months. It went on for months. And you know how I like my sleep, Michael. I was not a happy girl. But when they were lining up the people to speak, I told them, I said, listen, you better have somebody very exciting on after me, because I'm guaranteeing you this lecture is going to bring down the house. And it did.
Excellent.
So, you know, when you follow your intuition, you listen to that inner voice, when you're really channeling truth for spirit, it may be uncomfortable, because I know you're probably wiped out from finishing this book. But the end result is always worth it.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I am totally wiped out, but I must explain, as I think we've said before, it's not the fact that I've connected with Joseph that wipes me out, because that is bliss.
Right.
And that is an excitement in being able to bring this information through. What wipes me out is coming down from that high vibration back into this vibration, which claws at you and surrounds you like mud or tar.
I know, I feel like that every morning.
The dominant thoughts of the field and the dominant thoughts of mankind. And because you are, as you'll know, Maria, in that state, highly sensitive, you pick them up to a greater degree than you do in the everyday world.
Absolutely. It's
and
like
that, combating that lower energy is what exhausts me.
Absolutely. It's soul crushing. Listen,
yes,
I feel like that every morning before I turn on my gadgets to see what horror happened while I was sleeping.
Thank goodness we have sleep. Thank goodness we can escape for a few hours.
That's for sure. Anyway, I have some questions for you from our listeners. And the one question is kind of interesting, and I love him. This is from Toby. He said, this might be a boring question. He said, but I wonder, what does Michael do to relax? I don't think it's a boring question. I think it's an excellent question.
No, it isn't a boring question. Well, as a young man, I was a frustrated special effects director. I was always fascinated with model work in series and in TV series and films and the way that models could be made to look real. And there was a director here that I met a couple of times called Gerry Anderson,
who
in the 60s and 70s produced, first of all, puppet programs, very sophisticated puppet programs like Thunderbirds, which you've probably heard of over there.
Oh, yeah.
And then went on to live action. And I began as a model maker in my early teens. I made some very bad models and then progressed and progressed and progressed and taught myself new skills and linked with other like-minded chaps who also made models. And that was the basis of the Hobby magazine that I produced for some 20 years. And this is a spiritual story. It doesn't sound like it, but it is. That magazine that I published and edited in conjunction with David, one of the members of the Band of Light, allowed me for, and by the way, it was called Sci-Fi and Fantasy Modeling, and that's what it concentrated on, the sort of ships that you would see in science fiction films, spaceships, and how to make them and how to dirty them down and make them look realistic. But because we were doing it for ourselves, it allowed us the flexibility to also work spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the early days, I would be taking services at spiritualist churches. But then later on, David and I sat before Jane and Tony joined the two of us, sat when we could to bring through the Joseph Communications. So it was a labor of love, model making, that became a job that sustained us at a modest level for 20 years, but also allowed us the flexibility to say, today we're sitting. Today we're going to tune into higher vibrations and see what they want us to do. So the answer is, I still make models. Not the sort of thing that you would buy in a hobby shop, but things that are 3, 4, or 5 feet long.
Uh-huh.
And a very tolerant Jane puts up with all these things and doesn't say anything about them.
Well, we all have to have our hobbies, that's for sure.
Yes.
And to relax, you know, people have asked me that question for 20 years of blasting out the news, you know, how does it not affect you? And I let people know right after the show, I get busy in my life. You know, I go to the gym, I release all the anger, all the frustration, just moving my body. But, you know, otherwise, I mean, I like to relax with good word games. Okay. So it's different for everybody, but, you know, keeps your brain sharp. And that's what I enjoy doing. Because if we, you know, if we live in this reality 24/7, I don't think any of us could survive.
No, I don't think we'd remain sane. There has to be something that takes us away in creativity from the upset of this level of consciousness.
Right. If it's conscious at all. Sometimes I wonder about,
well, yes.
Is it conscious at all? Okay, I have some really interesting questions from Darren.
Darren, yes.
And, you know, it's a little long, but actually it's several questions, and I think they're great questions.
Right.
He's asking about intelligence after death.
Right.
He says, when we ascend into our life after death, how does our intelligence and personality transcend? Is it the same? Are we automatically genius on the other side? I think this is a great question.
It is a great question, yeah. Should we answer that bit first?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, intelligence is a means of dealing with our environment, isn't it, if we distill it down?
Mm-hmm.
It's a means of coping with and manipulating our environment on this level, and also the retention of facts and figures. That's how we measure intelligence. We have, independent of that, a spirit personality. But that spirit personality is not just the personality that we have in this particular lifetime. Because the personality we have in this particular lifetime is here to enable us to learn certain lessons. We've set it up in conjunction with those who help us on the other side, with our karmic considerations.
Mm-hmm.
We've set it up so that we will, if we get things right, learn certain things during this lifetime that will enable us to progress further through the spiritual spheres of reality once we've passed over. So the personality that we have and the intelligence that we have are not our spiritual, they are part of, but they are not the whole of our spiritual intelligence or our spiritual personality. Our spiritual personality is the sum of all the experiences we've had as the number of personalities we've had since we began to incarnate here.
Wow.
And also, our spiritual intelligence is not from the head, it's from the heart. And spiritual intelligence is understanding the way that God expresses himself or herself or itself, the way that we express ourselves as spirits, and understanding how we create as the angelic beings that we truly are. So what we've learned in a particular lifetime goes with us in that we can draw on it. But it's only a piece of the pie. It's only one chapter in the entire book of our spiritual existence. And what we set great store on earthly intellect here. But earthly intellect may or may not help us when we get back to the spiritual realms, because it's what we've learned as the spirits that we really are that's important.
Right, right. Well, here's another part. Here's another part to that question,
right,
which is also very interesting. He said, if we take up, whether or not we take our personalities with us, he said, what if our personalities were tainted with something like autism or OCD or, you know, a personality disorder that made us outcast in our societies? Would that carry over with us?
Well, you know, I've got various pairs of trousers. I have a pair of trousers that I wear when I go to the sanctuary, and they're a very smart pair of trousers. And I have other pairs of trousers, including a pair of trousers that I wear when I'm model making. And that pair of trousers that I wear when I'm model making have got, there are bits of glue stuck to them. There's bits of car filler stuck to them. There are holes in them. And my point is, I'm not either pair of trousers. I'm the spirit that's inhabiting that suit of clothes. And so the autism or any other aspect of this earthly personality is there often to teach us as a spirit something, or to teach the people around us whose lives we touch something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really us. It's in the lower stages of spiritual reality, once we pass over, if we're not terribly au fait with how things work on that side, it is possible that we will retain some of those characteristics until we creatively, from the heart, think our way out of them. In other words, realize that we don't need them and that they're not part of us.
Right.
That they've been part of something we've been wearing in order to operate in a certain environment.
Right.
But we progress from those disabilities and through those disabilities into the spirit people that we really are, we are the sum of the spirit experiences that we've had as multiple personalities, both male and female, that go back to our first incarnation. So we were the sum of all these things.
Right.
But we are not physically or mentally bound, except in cases where we still bind ourselves because of our dominant beliefs. But once we've grown out of those dominant beliefs, once we realize that we are perfect, once we realize that we are whole, then those things fall away, like that old pair of trousers.
That's a good analogy. Well, you know, he also wondered, I guess, that, you know, if you were all of a sudden better on the other side, would that make you unrecognizable in the spirit realm to others?
Yes. This is a quite a complex one. It depends on the people that know you when they pass over, or the people that have known you and have already passed over. It depends on where they are on the spiritual ladder with regard to how they view personality.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if my mum, if I go over and my mum only thinks of me as her son, then she will see me, the spirit that I really am, as her son. If, however, she thinks of me as her son and the spirit that I really am with the experiences that have enabled me to gather light on my spiritual journey, she will see me both as her son and as that spirit. I've had many instances when working as a medium where, for example, a baby has come through.
Mm-hmm.
And a baby has stood in front of me, a toddler has stood in front of me and said, this is what I look like. Tell my mum this is what I look like, this is who I am, this is how I passed. So I've given that information and the mother has accepted that their child is in front of them. And then that child has suddenly grown in front of me into this wonderful, brilliant, shining, luminous spirit and said, tell them that's who I am now. That's who I really am. So that the child is there in vision and the advanced spirit is there in vision and they are one and the same thing. When friends pass over, sometimes we will go and collect them. We'll say, well, we get the message that somebody's passing on a certain day and we're in the spirit realms and we say, right, I'll go and collect them. I'll be that friend that is waiting for them when they pass over. And that friend will initially see us as who we were in our earthly personality. But then, if they are spiritually minded enough and spiritually open enough, they will also see us as the spirit that we are in reality. And that aspect of ourselves that we've shown to them, that they recognize, is simply that, an aspect, a facet of mm-hmm. a far more rounded and far more light-filled being.
Well, you know, I think the best way to understand that and see it visually, what you just said, is by rewatching, or if people have never seen it, the movie What Dreams May Come.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah. I mean, that movie just blew me away. The first night I saw it in the movie theater, I was like, wow, who wrote this? And then I went back three nights in a row to see it again because it just blew me away. But if you remember in that movie, there were a lot of people, especially his daughter, who felt her father didn't love her enough, who manifest a body as an Asian woman, a beautiful Asian woman, to get her father to notice her. But all along, of course, it's still her.
Yes.
Way you see souls switch around in bodies in that, I just thought it was an excellent movie.
Yes, it was. I suppose there's also an analogy. Do you remember the TV series Quantum Leap?
Yes.
Where each week Sam Beckett would leap into another body mm-hmm. and have to put something right.
Right.
And he would look in the mirror and see the person, but to himself, he was himself.
Right.
It's very much like that.
Exactly.
But the core of us is who we always are. But the personality is a temporary facade, but can be drawn upon because we've gone through that experience.
Well, I would say our personalities here are your little dirty pants that you work on with your models. Now, you know, it's interesting because I remember, you know, when I was studying with Sun Bear, somebody had asked him a similar question, you know, about channeling, actually, and, you know, calling in spirits. And Sun Bear's attitude was you had to be very discerning. And you had to be ready to work with spirits if they showed up. Don't get afraid. But I also remember one line he said, which cracked me up. He said, listen, if your Uncle Joe was an idiot when he was on this planet and your Uncle Joe is talking to you from the other side, he's probably still an idiot. So you you have to be discerning to who you listen to. I think that a lot of people are under the misconceptions that as soon as you die, you become perfect. You know, you become all knowing, all wise, all of this. But that's really not the case. For some people, it could take thousands of our years for them to get there.
Yes, it depends what their attitude has been to spirituality, how they've treated themselves, how they've treated others, and whether they've actually, in a metaphorical sense, looked up from this earth and thought, I wonder if there's anything else, and investigated what else there might be. And yes, people do get locked into their present personality for a time. And there are spiritual realms that are not much different than this one. And those realms exist because the people in them have not prepared themselves for any further refinement of personal and group vibration. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there are areas where there are streets, and there are areas where there are houses and shops and all the things that we would expect here. But as soon as the spirit wants to move on, as soon as the spirit says, this is not for me, this is not refined enough, this is not the light that I'm looking for, then those things disappear and they find themselves on a higher plane of existence.
Mm-hmm. Well, that all makes sense to me, but I'm sure it'll make sense to a lot of people. You know, last time you were on the show, we talked about how everything has a consciousness and how we should bless everything. Do you remember that?
Yes, indeed.
Well, a lot of my listeners have done exactly that, and they said they've noticed a huge change in their living space by doing that.
Oh, that's great.
I was kind of surprised when I was reading through Many Voices, One Missions. I think it was Silver Star, where you started talking to Silver Star about, or he started talking to you, about drugs and alcohol.
Yes.
And what I found interesting, because I totally agree, is that he said that he calls alcohol basically the demon drink.
Yeah.
And that the drink can show you demons. I try to explain to people that alcohol is a depressant. You know, it's not going to cheer you up to start drinking if you're already depressed. Alcohol is a big issue right now in the United States because we have what they're saying is a dry drunk running for the Supreme Court. And he did show some pretty demonic faces through his testimony. So to me, it was like, well, either he's still drinking or he never got help with his alcoholic behavior, because that comes through even when you're dry.
The worry is what attaches ourselves, what attaches itself to us in times when we lower our vibrations in that way. We become attractive to vibrations of a similar frequency. And we also become attractive to people on the spiritual side of life who have not yet given up that desire to be in an alcoholic state. Now, those people can't have a drink as we can have a drink, but what they can do is persuade someone who is of easily persuaded to take alcohol, to take that alcohol. And when they take it, they will step into their aura or step close to their aura. The two auras mingle. And the person on the spiritual side actually gets the thrill of the taste and sensation of alcohol once again. So it's difficult here. There are so many. I understand why people turn to such things, because they feel their lives are terrible. Their lives are hard to cope with, and they just need to shut off. They just need to shut off from this world for a while and take the edge off their mind. But there are safer methods of doing that. And people are going to say, oh, he's going to talk about meditation again. But yes, I am, because that is a safe way of connecting with a higher vibration that fills you with light and takes you out of this earth and gives you exactly the same sensation that you would have with alcohol, but with none of the side effects and none of the hangers-on.
Right, right. Well, you know, I'm when I'm out and about, and I do counsel a lot of young people, and I do get to see a lot of young people, and a lot of them, when I look at them, I can see a heavy gray or black aura around them.
Yes.
And either it's alcohol or it's some serious drugs that they're doing. And they don't realize that that leaves them wide open for a walk-in experience.
Yes, indeed.
And a lot of what walks in these days, obviously, is not very pleasant, nor from the angelic realm.
No, I've seen that black around people myself on occasion, and it's a terrible thing.
Yes, it is, maybe they'll have an aura that's a half inch around their body,
yes.
Is like close to death.
Yes.
I try to tell, younger people that if they are going to do anything like that, that they always have to put a protection around themselves first, because they're going to be vacating their body. And,
yes.
Nature abhors a vacuum.
Yes, yes. And of course, this state can be reached, that negative state can be reached, if we are not spiritually disciplined too. It's okay for us to try to contact the spiritual worlds, but we have to know what we're doing. And as you said earlier, Maria, we have to know who we're truly contacting. And we have to, our motive determines what we get back. If we are, the number of young people that I used to see in the spiritualist churches who would come up shivering and pale after a service and say, I've been playing with a Ouija board and I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they've left themselves open. They haven't gone through the right channels. And the right channel is to go to source first, is to go to God first, whatever our concept of divinity is, and ask for protection. And we shouldn't approach the spiritual realms unless we wish to work on ourselves positively and work for the world positively. Those are the only two reasons we should contact the spiritual realms.
Well, what do you think about...
It's the same lure for young people as alcohol or drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a thrill waiting for us. Let's see what happens.
Right.
The problem is what happens can be very nasty, as we both know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Michael, we're going to take a short break. Stay with us.
Okay.
Michael and I will be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Null Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that again is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Hi, Maria here, and I have a message due to the pressure of the times we're living in. I'm calling on all students and millennials to get the education they need to fight the fascism taking over our world. I've made a special subscription offer for students and for seniors on a limited budget. For just $9.99 a month, you can subscribe and get that education. Over 500 hours of real education that's necessary to understand the world, the problems, and the solutions. Remember, knowledge is power. Together, you can change the world, but to do so, you must be informed of what's really going on and have real facts to support you in your endeavors. It's time for all the grandmothers to take a stand and teach the younger generation what their life could be and how to get there. Help me help you. One person cannot do it alone, and the guidance you seek is right here at www.maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. Your generation is the generation we've been waiting for, so let me help you. Thanks for listening. Okay, welcome back to The Bigger Picture, and it's been a fast half hour, Michael, for sure.
Yes, indeed.
You know, what do you think about people that think, and actually do, that they're a shortcut to having spiritual revelations through drugs such as ayahuasca, LSD, or whatnot?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I know that there's a rich tradition of that in certain cultures. For me, that doesn't work. For me, you have to be in control so that if you want to contact the spiritual realms, you can do that at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that in a hospital waiting room. You can do that on a bus. You can do that whenever there's an emergency in your life or someone else's life where you need to contact higher authority and access your intuition at a moment's notice. It worries me because it feels like it's a crutch, and you shouldn't need that crutch. You should be able to sit down, to connect, to see clearly, to hear clearly what's going on, and then shut down, having opened up, and get on with your life. I'm not in favor of it, but that's just my personal opinion.
Right. Well, you know, most people I know that have, and I guess I need to say this today because I haven't talked about it before, but most of the people I know that have used ayahuasca for this big spiritual awakening had horrific experiences and said that they would never do it again.
Yes.
Now, you know, when I was younger, I'm sure like most people on their spiritual path, we all seem to have read the same books in the same order. You know, we started with Edgar Cayce. We graduated from there to Carlos Castaneda. And I remember, God, I must have been in my maybe 30 reading Castaneda. And I loved all his books, but I was very puzzled by why he needed to do drugs to get that information, because all I ever needed to do was sit under a tree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in the same way that they are mind-altering substances. You need to be, as you know, you don't get out of your mind if you are contacting the spiritual realms. You control your mind.
Mm-hmm.
How can you control your mind if it's being taken over by a mind-altering substance? And surely that then influences the visions that you're having, the things that you're hearing, the things that you're feeling. They are being altered by the invasion of a poison into your physical and mental beings. Far better to patiently and slowly learn how to meditate, learn how to sit with a teacher, or learn how to sit with yourself connected to the divinity within, and in stages, test the spirit, test what's coming through, see if it's accurate, and at any point, if you feel uncomfortable with it, or that those vibrations don't harmonize with your own, you stop and you ask for advice and you ask for help, none of which you can do if you're in a highly drugged state.
Mm-hmm.
Why would God want us to put ourselves in danger in order to contact him? It doesn't make sense to me.
Right. Well, you know, I remember Castaneda's last book, which I don't recommend to any of my students unless I feel they're strong enough to read it. And I believe it was called The Art of Dreaming, where he talks about the inorganic spirits and the negative spirits that you can encounter if you're on the other side and unprepared.
Right.
So, you know, people need to be careful. You know, what do you open a doorway to? Do you know what I mean? It's not a curiosity. You know, I had one student, this young man in the valley, who wanted to go faster with his journey than he was able to. But he pushed himself so fast that he started having very negative, scary things happen to him. And I tried to explain to him over and over again, you know, the journey is lifelong. You know, the end of your spiritual journey is death. So what's the rush?
Yes. And also, why are you doing this? That is a question that each spiritual student must ask themselves. Why am I doing this? What is my purpose in doing this? If your purpose is to become famous or to have adoring glances from a group, mm-hmm. then you're not in it for the right reason. Your purpose should be to discover what you truly are, to discover what you are comfortable with spiritually, to discover if there's anything you can do to help others, and then gain the spiritual knowledge to help others effectively and safely and carefully, and ultimately to change this world for the better. Those are the things that you should be considering. And again, with many spiritual students, they think everything will be fine when I've evolved spiritually, when I can see and hear and sense spiritually. No. Your life will not get easier. It will get harder. It will get harder because you will have the burden of seeing how things should be mm-hmm. and how they really are. And so if you're not prepared for that, if you're not prepared to give over your whole life, every minute of your life, to the spiritual pursuits in order to help yourself, to help others, and to help this world right itself, forget it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the spiritual path is a lifestyle. It's yes. what you do every minute of every day. It's sort of like, you know, you can't choose to be an environmentalist when you feel like it. Okay, you either are or you aren't. And people don't realize, you know, it's not I'll set aside an hour for my spirituality. It's how are you living your day every minute of the day.
Absolutely.
And
it
could
changes your viewpoint of every aspect of your life. You can't go by.
No, you can't.
As I've said to people that I've linked with over the years who've wanted to develop spiritually, if you put your feet on this particular set of rails, you can't take them off.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they can, and some of them do for a while, but it brings them back. The knowledge brings them back to spiritual service.
Well,
and as we know, it is not about money. It's not about money. If you think you're going to get rich, forget it. And if you do get rich, you're doing it for the wrong purpose anyway.
Well, you're either building your house here or you're building your next house.
Absolutely.
You know, in the last show we did, that's one of the takeaways I got, was when you said that, you know, we're here, you know, while we're here, we're building our next house. And I will share this with you, and I've repeated that to so many people because it's so simple. It's such a simple explanation. A couple of weeks ago, my granddaughter called me. She's 23. She's very gifted, and she's very sweet and thinks she can't understand why everybody's so ugly, nasty, and the world is the way it is. And she continues to be a good person doing for others. And when she was kind of, you know, feeling sad about it and she was talking to me, I said, listen, you can't change who you are. I said, and if other people are nasty or mean to you because of who you are, don't worry about them. I said, you're working on building your next house.
Yes, indeed.
And I think if more people could remember that, they would change the way they live their life every day instantly.
Absolutely. It's the fact that we have consequences to how we act. Because we're sort of shoehorned into this physical body, we think we can get away with things. We think that if things are a secret, nobody knows about them. Mm-hmm. And there are no consequences to treating people badly, to being violent, to being power-seeking, to being materialistic. But there are consequences. And those consequences are not visited upon us by some vengeful god. The consequences are that we restrict our ability to move into higher vibrational fields. And so we can only harmonize at the end of our lives with the level of vibration that we've built around us, that house that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So if our level of vibration is poor, is power-seeking, is violent, is selfish, then that vibration that we've built around ourselves attracts a similar vibration.
Exactly.
So we find ourselves in an area with other selfish people. We find ourselves in an area with other power-seeking people. And that's a very sobering prospect.
A very frightening
prospect.
There's
no getting out of it. There's no thinking, I'll live today and to hell with what happens tomorrow.
Right. I try to live my life only concentrating on getting out of here and where I'll be on the other side.
Yes.
So
yes.
To me, that's my most important mission here. You know, what you just said reminds me of a visual I never got out of my head from one of your earlier books, which, as you know, is still my favorite, Your Life After Death.
Yes.
Where you said, if you've been a couch potato your whole life, you're going to wake up on the other side in a room full of other couch potatoes, and you're probably going to just lay there as couch potatoes for a very long time before someone loving might actually say, hey, this isn't real. You can step out of this now.
Yes, until the light within us dawns. The light within us dawns, and we think, yes, I've done enough of this. But of course, we're using our free will. We can be that couch potato for however long we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But there are such glorious things awaiting us. We have to remember that we are angelic beings. We're not this flesh and blood and bone. We are angelic beings. And yet we settle for so little. We settle for so little that we expect once we've passed over. And we settle for so little here. We're capable of so much more. My goodness, we create planets. As part of God, we create planets and stars and universes as part of the angelic host. And we're settling for being a couch potato.
Mm-hmm.
We have to put things in perspective, and we have to put things in perspective here. And if we remembered and linked to our angelic heritage, we would put things in perspective here. We'd put things right here.
Right.
We'd right all the wrongs that we see in society. But again, we can't do that from the vantage point of being a couch potato.
Right.
We have to get up off that couch, spiritually speaking, and we have to do something. And we have to do something, as you said, not for 5 minutes a day, but to live our lives in a spiritual manner, to attract the light from within, to give out the light from within, to be an example, and also to facilitate the change that's needed here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the biggest problems on this planet, and I don't think it's a new one, is the absence of the sacred. You know, nothing is considered sacred anymore. There's no respecting what is sacred. We don't look at the earth as a sacred, a separate entity. We don't look at each other that way either. And unless we can return to the sacred, I don't really see this drama getting any better here.
No, and funnily enough, that is one of the subjects in Joseph's next book.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
So we are touching on some of the areas that Joseph is covering with the same urgency that we're discussing it this evening.
Well,
you're absolutely right. We don't consider the earth to be alive.
Right.
We don't consider anything to be alive outside of our field of influence, as we discussed last time. We don't realize that our houses are alive, that our streets are alive, that the earth is alive, and that we interact with that sentience. We interact with that field of life. And that ultimately there is nothing outside of that field of life except in our own minds. And that's where the negativity starts, and that's where the negativity is projected from that results in the earth we have, in the society that we have. You're absolutely right. We have to get back to a respect for each other and for the planet, and of course for animal life as well.
Well, yeah.
Which we treat dreadfully.
It is a horror, you know. I know you don't, lucky you, you don't have to watch the news. But when people were sending me pictures and videos of the destruction after Hurricane Florence, in the states here where they raise most of the animals for food, especially pigs, there were pictures of, thousands of drowned pigs. And when I looked at that, I realized that that was a more humane way for them to die than at the hands of a man in a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
That was my first thought. Yes, I felt sorry for those souls. But in a way, I said, it's an easier way to go.
Yes, indeed.
You know, and then, you know, what we do to these animals, and then you put that inside your body, you know, you've got the vibration of all that terror on the inside, which I think locks you into the drama here even more.
Absolutely, it does. It grounds you, literally. And we are so blind in that terror, that heavy matter that we're not supposed to be ingesting, then gives us cancers. Mm-hmm. And then we say, how can we cure cancers? Well, we'll put you on this drug or we'll put you on that treatment. But this drug and that treatment are very often seen as a moneymaker for the corporations.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to avoid such things, then we shouldn't be eating our fellow beings.
Right. Well, we're no longer carnivores. Right. I remember in one of your earlier books, you said there's no meat eating off planet, so why not get started now?
Absolutely.
All right. So in this book, and even though you mentioned it's going to be in your new book, you have a series, I think it's with the Arab gentleman, where he does talk about the fact that this planet is a planet of drama and that there's drama in everything.
Yes.
It's inherent in
the vibrations of the earth.
Right. What's a good way for people to stay out of the drama?
Well, first of all, we have to retreat. And that doesn't mean that we shut our front doors and don't go out onto the streets.
Uh-huh.
We have to retreat from the drama of life for a time every day. We have to go within and find the peace that resides within. We can't find peace outside of ourselves when it's already inside of ourselves. So we have to look for that inner peace. We also have to recognize that there are points in a day where we can go one of two ways. We can either escalate the drama or we can step back from it. And we have to learn to step back from our angers, to step back from our personal hurts, to step back from taking offense at every little word that is said, and to say, well, that's fine for you, but that's not the way I'm going to approach it. Mm-hmm. And we step away from it, leaving the other people to deal with their anger, not accepting it, not connecting to it. My spiritual teacher, John, that we've mentioned many times on this show, always used to be bemused when older people, and I'm including myself in this, would suddenly be in an argument, and she would say, what are you doing? You should be thinking about the next place, not about arguing. You should be putting your house in order.
Right.
And of course, we don't do that. We say there are terrible dramas, but we buy into them and we add to them.
Mm.
We have to subtract from them. We haven't to be part of the drama of society. And there is no cowardice in stepping back from anger. There is, in fact, bravery in that, because most people aren't brave enough to do it.
Well, you know, I learned a long time ago a great little go-to to say to people when they want to wrap you into whatever their latest drama is. And you know, as a Sicilian, what I'm talking about, Michael. So I came out with this saying, and I still use it. And of course, listeners, you guys are welcome to use it. When somebody starts trying to rope me into their drama, I just say out loud right to their face, listen, I honor you, your drama, leave me out of it. And then I just walk away because I don't want a life of drama, okay? You can't progress if you have madness going on in your life and other people's dramas trying to rope you in constantly, because for whatever reason, humans have this desire to be right at any cost.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
You know, and I
also
just...
At the heart of each drama, if people look for it, there is peace. There is a way out of that drama. But they prefer the drama. They prefer the drama. They prefer the chaos. They've bought into the field of human consciousness. And we have to become aware that we are buying into the field of human consciousness and say, it doesn't matter. What matters is the good of my immortal soul. What matters is the good of everyone else's immortal soul. And what matters is the good of the planet. And no drama is worth buying into when those things are at stake.
Right, and none of it matters anyway.
No.
You know, in the long scheme of things, nothing that happens here really is going to matter when you're gone.
No. It's the experience that we gain from the challenges of life that determine how our eyes and souls are opened as we move on. But as you say, no, it's the ghost train, as we've mentioned many times. It's a fun fair. Why would we invest in the fun fair to the extent that we believe that it's real? It's smoke and mirrors.
Exactly. Bad smoke and bad mirrors. You know, I have a lot of young and not so young women asking me whether or not, you know, they're all in romantic love, whether or not they should have babies. And right. I give them straight out of the Joseph book answer. Why would you take a perfect soul having a great time in spirit and bring this to this extremely sick and dysfunctioning planet? And, you know, people need to pause and realize that the time for bringing more souls to this planet is over. I mean,
absolutely.
It's such an act of selfishness. That's just the way I see it now.
Stop responding to a biological urge to perpetuate the species. There is no need to perpetuate the species. The species is immortal.
Exactly.
The species is immortal.
Right.
Why do you need to perpetuate the species? And why would you bring a baby into this world if you have no knowledge of life after death and you pass on to that baby the fear
right.
of there being perhaps nothing after physical death, and you bring it into a world that is rife with disease, with violence, with power-seeking, with materialism? How is that in any way a spiritual act? Just so that you can have a dolly that you can say coochie-coo to.
Exactly. Well, you know, I saw a comedian, I think his name was, God, I want to remember, maybe Chris Carter, Chris Cooper. I just caught a little bit of his act on TV, and he was talking about just that, and he said it so well. He said, okay, so the Bible said be fruitful and multiply. He said, but the Bible's never been stuck in rush hour. He says it's time to stop having babies. And you know what? It was also another good analogy. And listen, if you're out there listening and you're pregnant or you're looking forward to having a child, you know, I know my audience are going to be good parents because they're educated and they're spiritual. But, you know, when I look at a lot of these kids that I see, you know, especially with their parents, you know, I could see the poverty. We've got a lot of homeless people in my town with children. You know, what kind of life are those kids going to have? So, you know, you really need to think long and hard about so many things. And that's why, you know, we talk about your spirituality is 24/7. It's not something like going to church on Sunday.
Yes, and it has to be something that you consider without our influence, without religion's influence, without a biological influence. Consider in your quiet times and say, why do I want this child? Is it because I want the child to have a wonderful life? Or is it because I want a child?
Exactly.
And if the answer is I want a child, then you're not considering that life that you're bringing in.
No, then it's a selfish reason.
Yes.
You know, and religion is, you know, forces people to have children. Certain religions, like the Catholics, you got to have a kid every year. You know, the Mormons, you know, you're bringing in a god, you have to give the god a body. I mean, crazy reasons. Do you know what I mean? And people need to really, you know, pause, because the reality is once you have a child, it's there forever. And it's your responsibility, at least for the first 18 years. And are you person enough to be able to handle it? Because Michael, I will tell you, all the things I've done in my life, absolutely nothing was more difficult than being a parent. Nothing. You could hang me on a cross and it would have been easier. I mean, I got through it. It's a good thing I picked a strong astrological sign for myself. But, you know, it's not just the romance, you know, on, you know, three men and a baby, you know, and the silly comedies they put before us. It's a huge responsibility.
And I think there's a metaphor there in that, metaphysically speaking, God at this moment is saying, yes, Maria, you know, it is hugely difficult being a parent.
Yes, it is.
Because there are all these souls out here with free will. And look what a mess they're making of things.
Exactly. Anyway, Michael, thank you so much for today. I wish we did this more often, but I guess it'll still feel like a year from now when I talk to you again in December.
Yes, in December, only 2 months. But I'm a great pleasure.
I'm looking forward to your new book.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Michael.
Take care on you. God bless now. Bye-bye.
Bye. Michael Rakia, check his work out at josephspeaks.com. It's pure truth. I don't know what else to tell you about his work. If I didn't think so, he sure as heck wouldn't be on my show all these years. And again, thanks for supporting the show. Tomorrow I'll be back with the news. It might be a little late, depending, because I'm going to be on Richie Allen's show at 10:10 Pacific time tomorrow. And Friday we'll be doing Stars Are Us with Joe Anthony, where we'll do the astrology for the month. So thanks for subscribing and supporting the show, and I'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.